Hi, I'm Jim Poplava. I started Financial Sense in 1985 to give clients a boutique, personal investment experience that's hard to get at a large company. For three decades, my company has been helping families build, manage, and protect their wealth through tailored financial planning and investment management. If you are looking to make financial sense of a complex world, give our office a call at 888-486-3939 to speak with one of our advisors today and let us help you plan your future.
Well, if you listen to our first hour with Dan Wintropski, Jim and Dan talked about central banks being between a rock and a hard place, dealing with a pro-inflationary environment. War is very inflationary. Central banks are trying to combat that by raising interest rates, but that puts pressure on the banking system. Today, we're going to discuss in our big picture how there's really no easy way out of this. And the most likely path is for a devaluation of the dollar. So, Jim, let's talk about where this all starts with U.S. debt levels.
We have increased the debt by $9.5 trillion just in the last 3 years. And as I pointed out, it took 43 American presidents and 250 years of history to get to $9.5 trillion. And the first real big inflationary surge came with George Bush. He doubled the national debt from $5 trillion to $10. Obama doubled it to $20. Trump added a couple trillion, and then Biden has added over $7.5 trillion. And that's not the end of it. We're talking about the big story that will probably come up in Q3 of this year will be the debt ceiling debate. The president said he's not going to back down on his spending programs. The CBO said that the Biden budget would add another $19 trillion more to the debt by the end of the decade. So, Chris, we are going up rapidly. And just to give you an example, we've been talking about Fed rate hikes. And as Dan Wintropski was talking about this cycle of interest rates that we're now entering in, into higher interest rates. According to the CBO, $640 billion will be the interest cost on U.S. debt this year. They're projecting next year, the interest on the debt will go to $739 billion. And by the year 2033, the interest on the debt will be $1.4 trillion, equal to almost 40% of the U.S. budget. So what we have now is the U.S. budget is growing at 2 to 3 times tax revenues. And another way to look at this, it's not just the deficit spending, it's also the money supply since 2008. M3 is up 500% or up tenfold. So we've never seen what we've seen in the last 3 years with deficit spending and money printing. I mean, if you take a look at a graph of the Fed balance sheet. I mean, it basically went, Chris, from a little over $4 trillion and went all the way up to $8.9 trillion. What's interesting with this banking crisis, let me see here. I'm looking at a chart on the Bloomberg. Okay, we hit the peak on the Fed's balance sheet in April of last year. We were almost up to just slightly short of $9 trillion. Then we got down to $8.34 trillion as the Fed got into quantitative tightening. It was rolling, it wasn't rolling over the debt that came due. It just simply disappeared. Just as they created out of thin air, it vanished out of thin air. This banking crisis set the Fed's balance sheet. We went right back up to $8.7 trillion. So, Chris, we increased in 2 weeks, we increased the Fed's balance sheet by $400 billion. And markets run on liquidity. And it's that liquidity that has been injected in the market the last 2 weeks. It's no surprise that stocks have held up under these circumstances.
You know, Jim, it seems like we've been through a few cycles here. I know you've been through a few more than I have, of course. But, you know, every time we see an economic downturn or the markets begin to falter, if that's the banking system in the case that we're seeing now, you know, eventually they just lower rates again and then they pump liquidity back in the system. It's sort of this rinse and repeat cycle. How do you see this pattern playing out again? Or are there any differences to what we've seen in the past?
It's the same cycle. They've been doing this, Chris, for 5,000 years of recorded history. I don't care if it's pharaohs, kings, prime ministers, presidents, or dictators. They all do the same thing, debasing the currency. I'm just reading a book now on the Roman Empire and its collapse. And part of it is currencies. And one of the things I collect antiquities, and I have a display of the coins of the last Roman emperors. And Chris, you could see the base metal content, I think, got down to like, it used to be 100% silver, got down to about 10%. I'm looking at my collection as token coins. And this is what the average person, the people on the street would be using in commerce. And you could see the size of the coins and the difference in the metal content. That was the way they used to debase the currency. They would clip coins. So if a quarter used to be the size of a quarter, the king needed more money, they would just issue new coins and the quarter would be smaller and have less silver content. So this is a game that's been going on for over 5,000 years. And just to give you an example, it's not just the U.S. dollar. The world's major currencies have lost 80% of their value against gold in the last 20 years. The U.S. has lost 98% of its value since 1971. The British pound has lost 99% of its value. The German euro has lost 96%. Canada has lost 99%. So it's not just, Chris, a U.S. thing, although we're a leader in this, but it's global. And to put this in perspective, what we do is when they lower interest rates, they make the cost of borrowing money cheaper. And it's behind the great amount of leverage that you see in our financial system today. I don't care if it's derivatives, if you're looking at the futures market. And since 1971, global debt has gone from $5 trillion to $300 trillion today. So we see this pattern over and over again. They print money, they create a bubble, then they raise interest rates, they burst the bubble, then they increase debt and more money, and they restart the whole cycle. We are now in the end game. And the problem is we've never allowed the system to cleanse itself of the bad debt and all the malinvestments that are caused by cheap money. So now we're at a point where we have massive debt. I just mentioned some of those treasury numbers. Even the CBO is talking about where we're going to be, $50 trillion in debt by the end of this decade, or if not sooner, especially if we go into a recession where tax revenues drop and government spending goes up, as we saw during the COVID lockdowns.
So again, we've seen swelling debt levels in the U.S. and globally, of course. We saw this go into hyperdrive after 2020 when, you know, global economies around the world went into lockdown. That was a massive drain on governments, lack of tax revenues coming in, and also massive amounts of fiscal spending at the same time. So that kind of put things into hyperdrive. And now at this point, you know, what we see is that the likely path forward is to debase the currency. As we've seen, like you said, throughout human history, that is the most likely way in which this will be dealt with. China and other countries are looking at this, looking at the U.S. dollar as the global world reserve currency and seeing these giant debt loads that we have here and the control that we have over the international monetary system, and are obviously trying to position themselves geopolitically, financially, as a way of perhaps trying to mitigate some of the inevitable consequences or inevitable scenario that we're talking about of this debasement that is likely to take place in the years ahead. So if you wouldn't mind, tie this into where this situates us with the U.S. dollar and all the talk about it potentially losing its reserve status.
Yeah, before I mention that, I just want to talk about the last inflation-fighting central banker that we had in this country was Paul Volcker. So if you take a look at all his successors from Greenspan, Bernanke, Yellen to today's Powell, all have inflated and created debt-fueled bubbles. So where we're going right now is the U.S. has used the financial payment system, SWIFT, and they've used our currency as a way to punish people on foreign policy. So a lot of countries, like when Russia invaded, we suspended their access to the system. So countries are saying, the hell with you. We're going to go around it. So China is moving to dethrone the U.S. dollar. China and Russia are accumulating vast amounts of gold And they're probably going to go to a gold-backed currency that could displace the dollar. You're also seeing agreements with commodity producers to trade outside. This week, China just nixed a deal with the Brazilians, who are major exporters of commodities, to trade between them in commodities outside the dollar. You're seeing Gulf states like Saudi Arabia, India, Russia, Iran, and other emerging markets. And where this is going to become really important, a lot of these emerging markets are commodity producers, and they're moving out of the dollar because they don't trust it. They don't like the way it's being depreciated and all the money printing that's been going on here. Because if you're selling a commodity in dollars and that dollar is depreciating, you're getting less for what it is that you're selling. So you're seeing a growing coalition being led by China that is going to be anti-dollar. And so I believe in Peter Zeihan, we'll probably see something like a multi-currency world where you might see the U.S. trade with Canada, Mexico, maybe Japan, and Europe in dollars, and the rest of the world is going to be trading in another commodity. And more importantly, you're seeing the end or the death of the petrodollar. So this is really important because U.S. debt levels are now so large, the only way out of this is to inflate, and eventually the U.S. dollar is going to be devalued against gold in an effort to stave off a debt collapse. It's coming. And what's interesting, if you study history, all hyperinflations have been currency-driven events and collapses. And like I said, it's being repeated. And what's driving a lot of this is the intellectual theory behind this is modern monetary theory, which basically says if you can issue debt in your own currency, you can simply spend as much money, print as much money as you want. You don't need to worry. And Chris, both parties are behind this. And even though Biden is probably one of the biggest spenders that we've seen in history, don't forget, Trump was running trillion-dollar deficits. So this $9.5 trillion of deficits that we've seen, you know, one year, it was, I think it was like a little over $1 trillion, maybe $1.4 trillion that came with Trump's last year in office as we went into those COVID lockdowns and all the stimulus programs. The deficit that year was over $1 trillion. So this isn't all Biden.
Yeah, it's systemic in nature. And that's, I think, the big point that we pointed out, that this crosses over both party lines. It's not a Republican or a Democrat phenomenon. And like you said, this rinse and repeat fashion, where every time you see economic growth, rather than allowing those financial excesses to cleanse out of the system, which has a major deflationary impact, what happens is the central bank steps in, they lower interest rates, and they reliquify both on the fiscal and the monetary side. So this is a cycle, it keeps repeating. And obviously, China and all these other nations are seeing the handwriting on the wall, and they're trying to position themselves in a way where they mitigate some of the fallout from that by protecting their own economy and currencies. Obviously, every single economy, every country is going to act in its own strategic self-interest. This is not a political matter. It is a geopolitical matter. So these are just inevitable things and cycles that repeat over long periods of time. And so let's talk about a very interesting interview that you did years back with Lionel Shriver on this topic when it comes to, you know, the potential scenario. This was a fictional book that she wrote, but it was very prescient, talking about, you know, hyperinflation and some of the things that we could see and how this would play out. Would you mind touching upon that a little bit?
Yeah, the name of the book is called The Mandibles, A Family 2029 to 2047. And it almost sounds like it's out of Blade Runner, but this is not science fiction. It begins in 2029. The United States is engaged in a bloodless world war that will wipe out the savings of millions of American families. Overnight, on the international currency exchange, the almighty dollar plummets in value to be replaced by a new global currency, the bancor. In retaliation, the President of the United States declares that America will default on its loans. And basically, it's a story of how this family was a very prosperous and wealthy family and what they went to go through and survive. She's a best-selling New York Times author, and this book is so prescient. I mean, the stuff she's talking about in this book and how this plays out, you can actually see part of this today. And we're going to put that interview up on the website. Listen to it. You will enjoy reading the book, because not only because of what it tells you and how this plays out, I think in her book, the income tax rate is 77% in 2028. And we're getting to that point now, because in 2026, we revert back to the Obama tax rates of 39.6, add the Medicare tax of 3.8% on that, add state taxes, and then they're talking about wealth taxes, and then also lifting the limit on Social Security taxes. So Social Security taxes are 15.3. So imagine your income tax is 43, add 15.3 on top of that, add state taxes, and this is not too far from what she talked about in her book. But we're heading for an inflationary decade, Chris, and possibly hyperinflation. And another issue that's going to hit us, because we see inflation picking up in the second half of the year, we see oil prices closer to 100, and we are going to be looking at oil prices over 100 in this decade. And there's nothing the Fed can do about oil. This is a geological thing. It's called depletion, and it's been a lack of investment. Because, you know, we've got, 23 attorney generals that are suing some of the Wall Street banks for this ESG policy, depriving the oil sector of capital that they need. I mean, drillers, people in the shale patch, they need money to pay for those drills. And then they place the drills, find the oil, pump it out, and they pay those drills back. Well, without that capital, they're not able to do it unless you're a big company like Chevron and Exxon, who are in the Permian Basin right now. So the Fed is going to be forced to monetize the debt. The Fed's balance sheet, like I mentioned, in just 2 weeks went up $400 billion, just in 2 weeks, Chris. And the big surprise I think the markets are not prepared for in the second half of the year is, Dan was talking about, the return of higher inflation. Right now, the inflation has been increasing in the service sector. It's going to be increasing in the goods sector, especially with the declining dollar, and also rising commodity prices, which we're very bullish on. And the real key factor here is what they're going to do in the debt ceiling debate. The Republicans want to get spending under control and bring it somewhat in balance. And the administration says they're not going to budge. They want to spend more money, which would add another $19 trillion in debt by the end of the decade. So we also have to think about, if we are in a recession, which I think we're going to be, in the second half of the year, 2024 is an election year. What are politicians apt to do? If the unemployment rate is rising, if we're in a recession economically, if stocks are, you know, maybe in a bear market or going nowhere, usually what happens is you see a massive fiscal response. I mean, if they're spending this kind of money when the economy is growing, what kind of money are they going to be spending if we go into a recession? You could see $2 or $3 trillion stimulus programs, and the Fed may be forced to lower or cut interest rates. And I think they're going to lose credibility if they do that with inflation running at these levels.
Yeah, given what you said, Jim, I think it was very interesting that, you know, we recently spoke with Jeff Christian at CPM Group. He's one of the most accurate and objective precious metal strategists that we speak with on our show. But he's had this forecast for 2023 to 2025 being a particularly difficult time for the economy, the financial markets, and the banking system, going back at least 2 to 3 years, I believe, is how long he's been talking about this 2-year period that we're now in as being very problematic. And as we all know now, just this month, you know, we saw the second and third largest bank failure in U.S. history. And he also believes during this time that we are going to see more and more investors say, I want to hedge against some of these risks, against some of this turbulence, and I want to park a bit more of my money into traditional safe haven assets. So he believes it's during this 2-year period that we are going to see the next big bull market in precious metals. I know that's something that we are doing. We have exposure to hard assets, to precious metals. This is something that you have been recommending. You made a very strong recommendation for that in the very early stages of the 2020 COVID crisis, as we saw all of this mega stimulus come from the U.S. government, predicting a wave of inflation. So we have been protecting or hedging against these inflationary risks. But with that said, what are some of the broader investment implications, given what we discussed today, in terms of, you know, increasing inflation, some of the banking troubles that we see currently underway, and some of these larger macro issues that you touched upon?
I think, first of all, you need to hedge and protect yourself with precious metals. And I mean, actually own the bullion. We're working on a proposal that will bring down the cost of buying bullion, because people are paying anywhere from 60, 70. I've seen premiums as high as 84% on silver eagles. I've seen it 30% on gold eagles. We're working on a program that we hope to have in place by summer to bring that down. But you want to have precious metals. If you want to buy silver, try buying, if you're fortunate enough to have the means, you know, one contract on the COMEX is 5 1,000-ounce bars, and take delivery. And I tell you, Chris, we're watching, we monitor the COMEX warehouse daily. Gold and silver is flying out the doors. So you want to own base precious metals. You want to own commodities, as Dan and I talked about. This is going to be the biggest super cycle for commodities. Unlike the 00 decade where commodities took off, that was driven by the industrialization of China. What we're looking at now is commodity shortages because of ESG, lack of investment, and then also the transition to a green economy that requires vast amounts of minerals, whether it's lithium, nickel, whether it is silver, all those kind of things that make those windmills, all the stuff that we call green, EVs, copper. Copper is going to be in shortage, so we own copper. And the other thing that I've talked and written about, and especially for those that are nearing retirement, maybe you're 5 years away from retirement or 10 years, or maybe you're retired, is dividend paying aristocrats for income if you plan to survive. Because I don't need to tell you, just go to the store. It was interesting. We have a group of us that get together on Friday nights, and we were making fillets. And so I went to the store to buy fillets, Chris. In 1 week, the price of the fillets went from $33.99 to $35.99. That was just 1 week. Over a year ago, it was in the low 20s. So you're seeing it in food, you're seeing it in folks. Man, if you are thinking about getting a car, a new car, my advice, get yourself a hybrid. You know, EVs work in warmer weather. They don't work in cooler weather. They, you know, I think it's like 40% of the Teslas are sold in California. The only problem with California having an EV, our electrical grid is deteriorating. And so whenever we get hot weather like we did last summer, you know, the governor of the state asks you not to charge your EV. So I would get a hybrid, because the price of gasoline, and I predict in the next couple of years, get ready for $10 gasoline. It's coming. During the peak, we got up to a little over $7 and $8 here in California.
I'm going to start riding my bicycle.
I'm going to go a skateboard. So, and the other thing too, is this bear market isn't over. We've got a lot more turbulence. And especially when we get to the third quarter on the debt ceiling debate, that's going to be a knockdown, drag out fight. And once again, the banks are sitting on $2.2 trillion of losses in their bond portfolio. So if you have large amount of deposits, don't count on that every bank where you have an amount above the deposit coverage that you're going to get bailed out like they did in Silicon Valley. The other thing about this decade, Chris, it's volatile. It's going to be more like Dan and I were talking about, somewhat like the 40s, somewhat like the 60s, 70s. Passive indexing is dead. This decade, the era of easy market returns is now over. And I would say an ending, prepare now for higher inflation.
Yeah. And like Dan said, this period that we're now in is Very similar to what we see going on today is what we saw there in the 1940s, where there was a lot of policy uncertainty, a lot of policy volatility, right? Where basically central banks are between a rock and a hard place, having to choose between ongoing banking failures by raising interest rates, but then also on the flip side, trying to control inflation. And unfortunately, as we laid out today, we do believe that inflation is going to be on the higher than average side. And this is going to be difficult for central banks to manage. It's going to lead to likely more turbulence in the markets ahead. So in that case, there's a number of things that you can do, which we are also doing here at Financial Sense Wealth Management that we discuss here on our show on a regular basis. However, if you want to get in touch with us or find out more about how we can assist you, either with our comprehensive financial planning or with asset management, give us a call at 888-486-3939. Once again, that number is 888-486-3939, or you can always go to financialsense.com and click where it says contact us.
In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Sheridan and myself, we'd like to thank you for tuning into Financial Sense this weekend. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.